Neil Cavuto is the anchor of Your Money. He's got Your World with Neil Cavuto and Cavuto on Business on the Fox News Channel, and also has a brand new book out. That's called Your Money or Your Life. It's his second book. He's also, I think his title is Vice President of Business News for the Fox News Channel, and he joins me here this afternoon on the Paul Harris Show. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Vice President of Business News.
Sounds impressive, doesn't it?
When are you and Rupert going to start up a competitor to your old pals at CNBC?
Stay tuned, as they say, right?
Come on. Is there a Fox Business News Channel coming soon?
Hey, we're busy enough with the five business shows we do. Let's focus on what we got right now.
Is that a no?
I'm not going to comment. How's that? You're good, though, Paul. You're very good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're in New York, right?
Right now, I'm in Utah today. I'm on this book tour, so I'm calling it from Salt Lake City.
Okay, but you're based in New York.
I am indeed.
Okay. You guys just went through this security scare a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And it turned out to be based on a hoax, or at least they think it was based on a hoax. And since you're there, and since New York is the most hypersensitive city in America after 9/11 because of the attacks there, of course, where are we now on Homeland Security, do you think?
You know, as much as I like to think we've improved a lot, Paul, I maybe because I'm a bit more paranoid because I work in New York. I work, obviously, I'm surrounded by these concerns every day. I know how easy it would be to pull another terrorist incident off. I don't know necessarily the magnitude of 9/11, but certainly the type of stuff we see in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or in Malaysia, Indonesia, is very doable here in New York. I'm just surprised it hasn't happened yet. A lot of people criticized our mayor, Bloomberg, for, you know, responding the way he did. But as he said, and I agree with him, I'd rather err on the side of caution than not. And these threats, you can't discern early on what's bogus from what could be potentially real. So I think the better part of valor is to be vigilant. But to get back to your bigger point, Paul, my big concern as someone who works in Manhattan is that we're getting kind of nonchalant again. We're getting kind of careless again. Right after 9/11, all the city, you know, tunnels and bridges, subways were almost under lock and guard. I mean, you had police everywhere. And I know it's simply impossible to keep doing that. But I also know that Al-Qaeda and terrorist groups like them are very patient. I covered the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, and a lot of us thought we dodged a bullet. And I can remember one fellow who was an expert in terrorist groups at the time told me they want us to let our guard down, and they're extremely patient.
Yep.
And 8 years later, indeed, they did strike again. So it is, to finally get back to answering your question, it is something I worry about. I think that we are getting a little lackadaisical and thinking that, oh, it's been so long now, what do we have to worry about?
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. I said basically the same thing in the months after 9/11, that, you know, we were gearing up to be a high security nation, and I think in some ways we went a little bit too far, and the pendulum had to swing back a little bit. But I think it swung back too far because most Americans, and I speak of those of us here in the Midwest, because we were not directly impacted by it except in an economic sense,
right.
We haven't really had to make sacrifices in our lives other than that, and so we're not thinking about it on a daily basis. Of course, it's different there and at the Pentagon and in a field in Pennsylvania. It's different than it is here in the bi-state area. But I think there's a definite lax feeling towards that now, and that's unfortunate.
Well, I would remind certainly a lot of your listeners in the St. Louis area and elsewhere that that's just what terrorists like to hear. I'm sounding a little trite, but they like to think that middle America or the rest of America is saying, well, it won't be us, it'll be them.
Yeah.
It will be a big city, it won't necessarily be, you know, a St. Louis or a Cincinnati, let's say. I think that terrorists like us to think that way. And I think just like they like to say after 1993 when we sort of cockily said it will never happen here again, that they just sort of clasp their hands together and say, oh, yeah, it will. So I know I sound a little paranoid, and maybe that's because I am thinking of this stuff a lot. But, you know, I know how these guys operate, and I've seen some of these trials and covered some of them. And, you know, these folks, when I say amazing, Paul, I don't mean in a complimentary way, but they're incredibly disciplined and incredibly patient. And if you read the behind-the-scenes stuff that was going on after 93 and how patient they were, it's almost eerie.
Yep.
So I'm not, believe me, Paul, I'm not trying to scare your listeners. I'm just trying to say that old line about being vigilant and not assuming that just because it happened once and only in a big urban area that it can't happen to folks in their neck of the woods, in your neck of the woods.
Let's talk about something else that I think has a lot of impact on people, and this is something that people are aware of, and that, of course, is the cost of energy, gas prices and that sort of stuff. We just heard a couple of days ago, natural gas prices 40-50% higher this coming winter. You interned in the Carter administration.
That's right.
When we had one of the most famous energy crises in American history. What's different now?
Well, I think the difference now is that we have much more demand than we did then, Paul. The fact of the matter is, at that time, China and India weren't factors. I read an interesting statistic. I can't validate this, Paul. I'm sorry, but it was an energy analyst who told me that in, I think it was 5 years, China alone, will equal all the energy the world is using today. Now, just think of that. And India, of course, as any one of your listeners know, is a powerhouse. When they have a problem with their Dell or Gateway computers, technically they're getting that assistance on the phone from someone in India, no doubt. So India and China are growing at a rate three times our own. That's a startling figure. They are economic powerhouses that are just drenching the world oil supply. Pretty soon, China is going to eclipse the U.S. as the major user of oil. So demand is huge. Demand is huge. It wasn't, and the assumption that these higher prices will lead to, lower prices down the road because they're so high they'll lead to a global recession, that's leaving out the fact that China and India can weather that. And I think they go still higher, and we don't appreciate that this time, unlike the 70s or 80s experience, the one we had the second energy crisis, this time demand will swamp everything, and prices could go still higher if, A, we don't look for our energy alternatives here, or, B, make conservation efforts here. I think we have to do a little bit of both, and I think we're trying to now, but we're playing desperate catch-up.
Yeah, well, one of the bottom lines is if you want to pay less for energy, you got to use less energy because it's the old supply and demand thing. And we see, this week and last week, the numbers coming in from the auto manufacturers that they're selling a lot more small cars and there are a lot more trade-ins on SUVs and big gas guzzlers. And that's a good impact. But what about the word gouging when it comes to these oil companies? You know, I have listeners who email me and say, I see that ExxonMobil is making $110 million a day, the biggest profits in the history of any company on the planet. Why isn't something done about that? Because these gas prices, to my listeners, seem artificially inflated. Can there be anything done about that?
Well, I know it is very easy to, in times like these, criticize the folks who provide the energy stuff. Now, the energy companies are enjoying fat profits now because the product they sell is very pricey and in demand. It wasn't all that long ago, as you know, Paul, that energy wasn't so high, and a lot of these energy companies were hurting, and a lot of them were shutting down operations, and a lot of them were merging because times were tough. ExxonMobil, by the way, is the direct result of that. So I'm not an apologist for the oil companies, but nor do I forgive them for everything here. But this is really a supply and demand story. It's not a gouging story. There might be independent operators and owners of gas stations who, you know how it goes with them. They buy oil based on what they think it's going to cost, or gasoline to fill up their tanks again. And they sometimes pre-build into that the notion, well, if I paid 30% more from my last delivery to my next delivery, I'm going to build in a 30% increase for my next delivery. So that might be gouging to some people, but to say that it's necessarily coming from the oil companies, believe me, Paul, I am not an apologist for these guys. I'm just saying that this is really more basic economics at work, and it was heightened by storms, and it was accelerated by disasters. But oil trades like a commodity on the New York Mercantile Exchange. It's like a stock, Paul, and the fact of the matter is, it's a stock that's in demand, and the people who trade it know it's in demand. And while we love to sit around and think that maybe the five or six oil guys and the cartel guys are sitting around a table saying, I'm going to charge this much, you're going to gouge them this much, it's not that black and white. This is really a supply and demand issue, and we've got ourselves in this pickle because of the lack of refining capacity and the fact that we're quite in over the barrel with OPEC and people who make the oil, and we consume a lot of that oil.
Yep. That's Paul Harris talking with Neil Cavuto from Fox News Channel. He's got a new book out called Your Money or Your Life. All of this oil stuff, though, is going to have a huge impact on our economy. I keep thinking that this fourth quarter and the first quarter of 2006, we're going to really see the dominoes fall. Would you agree?
I think you'll see a hit. One thing that's always amazed me, Paul, when I've looked at the economic numbers, not to minimize the hurt of these oil prices, but you know, and I know you've been following this for a while yourself, oil was high long before Katrina and Rita hit.
Yep.
And yet throughout it all, our economy has been, you know, thriving. I'm not saying that we get over oil prices, but they're less of what we are than they were when you were talking about, you know, the Carter years. That's not to say that they're easy to take, but it is a perspective here that they don't rattle us the way they used to. I'm not in that camp, for example, that says we're going to hell in a handbasket or that we're going to go into a recession. I don't see that. What I do see is getting used to higher prices for a while. Maybe not much higher, though. I think I'm not in the camp, similarly, that says we're going to go to $6-$7 gasoline a gallon, and that's going to be the rule of thumb ad infinitum. Normally, Paul, I apply the rule that when everyone is saying something, it might behoove you to say something else or to think of something else. Hey, everyone is saying oil prices are going to go sky high and be with us that way forever. That gives me pause. When I see it on the cover of Newsweek, the cover of Business Week, the cover of Fortune, when I see it leading all these publications, that makes me think it's not going to happen.
Well, that contrarian viewpoint is actually something that's at the core of a lot of stuff you do. In fact, you say in the book that your success, the key to your success, was turning your back on Wall Street. Why?
Well, the way I look at Paul, I'm no genius. Don't get me wrong. I don't know a lot of big words. I don't know a lot of the acronym. I know the acronym, but I don't say it. And I think I tend to look at studying Wall Street is a lot like studying the masses and the crowds. And the masses and the crowds oftentimes chase on emotion. And the emotion right now tells you sky high energy prices, recession is inevitable, yada, yada. You have to give pause to that. In the late 90s, as you can remember very well, the masses said there was a new paradigm. At the time, I thought they were talking about paradigm. I had no idea it was paradigm. But the fact, what was kind of funny at the time, Paul, is everyone said earnings don't matter. What matters is price versus promise. That was how one analyst told it to me. And I remember, and again, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, Paul, but I would just say, well, shouldn't a company have earnings? Isn't that a good goal to eventually have earnings? And I remember this analyst saying, no, now you invest on promise and potential.
Mm.
And believe me, Paul, like I'm telling your listeners now, when you hear it's different this time, when you hear these are different rules, when you hear that this, you know, everyone's chasing something, you should at least think that maybe there's another side. So my view about ignoring Wall Street is I ignore the lemming mentality of Wall Street. I'm reminded that the brilliant investors of our times, the Peter Lynch's, the Warren Buffett's, the ones who have really withstood market, you know, gyrations, are those that have zigged when others have zagged and zagged when others have zigged. They've not followed the crowd. You know, Warren Buffett was one of the first to start buying stocks right after the 87 stock market crash, and I was always amazed at that. Peter Lynch, who I followed throughout my young career, was always buying energy when nobody was and dumping energy when everybody was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that being contrarian always wins, but it is a reminder that time and again, Paul, we are reminded that when everyone says something's a lock, it isn't. You know, you and I are probably maybe both too young to remember when in 1976, everyone said that the Ford folks, Gerald Ford folks, were hoping that Jimmy Carter would be the nominee for the Democrats because he was this helpless, hapless Southern governor who the President of the United States at the time, Gerald Ford, could easily be. And I only say that because I was at a session in Grand Rapids, Michigan, when I did my show out of there the other day. And the feeling was that Jimmy Carter was easily beatable, and everyone thought that way. And then Jimmy Carter won. I can remember when I was an intern with Jimmy Carter, not that I was on the inner circle by any means, Paul, but everyone hoped then in the administration that Ronald Reagan would be the nominee because he was this right-wing, you know, kook, former California governor, easily beatable, and we all know what happened. What I'm saying is beware of the consensus. Beware of what everyone is saying, and venture to be a little different. It will do you well with your money and your life.
You know, I don't do a lot of politics on this show, but you led me to something I want to talk about here with you. I wrote an op-ed piece for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch last year after the presidential election in which I said the Democrats have to stop making this same mistake, and the mistake they keep making is they don't look for what I call the regular guy.
Right.
Bill Clinton was able to pull it off. Jimmy Carter was able to pull it off. But the Republicans in Ronald Reagan, and even to a certain extent, even much more with George W. Bush, have been able to pull off this, look, I'm not a hyper-intellectual guy who hangs out with the elitists. I'm a guy kind of like you who can relate to you. We know that's not really true because they don't live in our world at all. But they were able to give us that illusion. Is that part of the problem for the Democrats?
Well, I think that's a brilliant point. I think you're exactly right. And by the way, I must have seized on your editorial because it's the same thing I've been saying on my show, so I've probably been secretly copying you. But I'll tell you, Paul, I subscribe to that. You know, many of my Republican friends criticize me when I say that George Bush, President Bush, lost all three debates with John Kerry, hands down, on issues, I think. And I like the guy. But he won on something else. He was more real. Now, I'm not saying whether he's genuinely more real and that John Kerry is less real, but there was an interesting sub-poll we did at Fox on, and I know you're going to think, geez, why do I have this Cavuto guy on? He brings up such dopey topics. But there was a question we asked at Fox poll, who would you rather sit down and have a beer with? Who do you think got 8 out of 10 votes?
Of course, George W.
George W.
Yeah.
Now, what are the odds, Paul, that he'd want to have a beer with you or me?
Well,
probably with you. I guarantee not with me.
Well, he and I have something in common. We don't drink anymore.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. But I think the point was that was interesting, leading out the fact that he's put down the bottle.
Yeah.
But that people felt they related more to Bush than they did to Kerry. I think you hit the nail on the head here. I think what will win an office for you is the likability factor. Not that you're a genius, but that you are more approachable, more likable, more human. I think Bill Clinton triumphed on this, even though, you know, I've interviewed him many times. He's a brilliant guy, but he played a real down-to-earth folksy Arkansas, you know, I'm just, you know, a regular guy, one, you know, all of that, and it worked. And it, you're right, it wasn't true. I mean, he was quite different. He was quite bright, and he was quite astute. And he was quite wealthy when all was said and done. The same with Ronald Reagan. He had more money than God, and he sold this regular folksy image. When we learned in retrospect, he was quite detached from a lot of folks. But it doesn't matter. If in debates you can appear more approachable, and Bush had, you know, gaffes left and right, but he was more approachable. He was more real.
Yep.
The candidate who wins, I don't know who he or she will be, Paul, in 2008, will be the candidate who is just more relatable. Doesn't have to be the smarter one, just has to be the one that appears to have good common sense or is approachable. Time and again, American history has rewarded those individuals that just seemed to relate to the masses. Abraham Lincoln had it. Harry Truman had it. FDR, who had more money than you could imagine, had it. John Kennedy, who was an aristocrat by anyone's estimate, had it. So you don't necessarily have to genuinely be that guy, but if you can play that guy on TV,
yep,
you're off to the races.
Absolutely. All right, one more thing, and then I'll let you go. There are a lot of people in my business, talk radio, and a lot of people in your business, talk television, because that's what really cable news has become. You guys,
right,
at Fox changed that paradigm very nicely, or
paradigm,
I'm sorry, right. Who are more to me interested in divisiveness. Let's talk about the extremists on the left. Let's talk about the extremists on the right. Let's play to them, and let's play up their good points and their bad points, whether, you know, whichever side we particularly as a host agree with. Let's play that up and make it seem like America is an embattled country where everybody has taken sides. I don't really see it that way. I see 10% here, 10% there, 80% in the middle who have to get their kids to soccer. You agree or disagree?
Well, I do kind of agree with that. I know there tends to be, you know, a lot of people say to me, well, this heat is very pronounced in broadcasting today. You know, I've been doing this a while, Paul. There was always heat as long as I've been in this business. There was heat when Ronald Reagan came to office, and do you want to build up the defense and have tax cuts? I remember plenty of heat then. There just weren't as many avenues to expose it.
But do you think that America is really as polarized as the media tends to make it seem?
Well, I think it's plenty polarized, but probably not to the degree that's out there. I think the winning candidate in 2008 is going to be the person who can make the blue state less blue and the red states less red. I really think that 2008 will be the year someone can forge a bridge between red and blue. That's why I say, and you know, you're going to think I'm crazy, Paul, but what the heck, I've said a lot of crazy things here. I think an independent candidate in 2008 could make serious inroads here, maybe even win the election, because both parties have turned off the American people.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Republicans have turned them off because of their poor stewardship of the economy, and I think the Democrats have turned them off because they haven't come up with a better idea.
Yeah.
So I think if, unless you want to continue doing your job and run as an independent, Paul, I think the fact is that there will be an opening, a segue for a credible independent candidate. We had that last opportunity was in 1992 before Ross Perot nutsed out. But really, he was running ahead. He could have gotten elected that year. Then he kind of went off the reservation. But there are plenty of maverick independent type thinkers who could surprise you and end up winning this thing. So
better
you
be
heard it from me. It could happen.
Better be somebody with money, which brings us back to the title of the book. It's called Your Money or Your Life. It's a selection of commentaries that Neil has done at the end of his broadcast for, I don't know, what is it, 10 years now?
That's right.
Yeah. Very entertaining reading. And, of course, he's up against me in the afternoons with his TV show, Your World with Neil Cavuto, which, if I were you, I would TiVo and watch later on.
Very smart. Very well said.
Thanks for your time today, Neil.
Thank you, Paul.
Neil Cavuto from the Fox News Channel here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.